Focus on testing. Page 177. Activity 1. Idea connection questions. Lecture. Close your books and listen to the lecture about chemicals and crime. Take notes. Then open your books and answer the idea connection questions that follow.
I think you're all familiar with the age-old debate over free will and predetermination. But recent medical research has added an entirely new dimension to it. In the past, it was mostly a question of whether, one, humans are free to make their own choices, or two, those choices are made for us by some higher power. Now, there's a third choice. My chemicals made me do it. Neuroscience has identified about 35 chemicals, the neurotransmitters, that help carry messages throughout the brain. Let's use one of them, serotonin, as an example. One of the first clues pointing to some relation between serotonin and crime came from a large Dutch family whose males were known for particularly violent behavior. Researchers who analyzed the brain chemistry of some family members found a chemical problem. The men had very low levels of MAOA, a chemical that breaks down serotonin. This suggested that too much serotonin could lead to violent behavior. Later, experiments indicated that too little serotonin might have the same effect. Violent and impulsive individuals were found to have brain cells that soaked up serotonin very fast. Since this neurotransmitter was known to calm certain people down, researchers reasoned that increasing serotonin levels would solve the problem. Drugs called SSRIs were developed to slow down the reuptake or absorbing of serotonin. They seemed to work. In fact, I think you've all heard of one SSRI, Prozac. It was so effective that it became one of the largest-selling medications of all time. Anyway, the bottom line is that no one knows exactly how serotonin or any of its 30-some chemical cousins really works. It has some relation to criminal violence, but what? Is too much worse than too little? I suspect the answer will involve a lot of factors— a lot of interactions among chemicals, environmental conditions, and even personal experiences. But I'm just guessing. The one thing we know for sure is that scientific research into brain chemistry is already influencing the criminal courts. If you commit a violent crime because your brain chemicals are out of balance, are you really responsible? Judges have long ruled that a legally insane person, a person who cannot distinguish between right and wrong, is not necessarily responsible for his or her crimes. Neuroscience might simply be discovering the chemical reasons for this insanity. The principle is being tested in the Nevada courts in the case of a young man whom I'll call Jason. Jason was arrested in a hotel lobby, and he quickly admitted that he had, in fact, just committed a murder. A hotel video camera showed him at the scene of the crime. His defense lawyers do not dispute that, unfortunately, he killed someone. However, they have argued that Jason's genetic background is to blame. Jason was raised by a loving and nonviolent adoptive father and mother, but investigators found that his biological parents and two brothers lived disturbingly violent lives. All had histories of violently aggressive behavior, mental illness, or both. Jason himself had been diagnosed with serious attention deficit disorder, ADD. The disorder is very often found in people whose brains lack enough serotonin. Further tests of Jason's brain chemistry will reveal more about this troubled young man, but some genetically based chemical problem is likely. His family's history of criminal behavior goes back more than 100 years. Jason was 18 years old when he committed murder, so he is legally an adult. But is he legally responsible for the crime? Those who say no point out that he has no control over the chemistry of his brain. Under the influence of that chemistry, they say, he could not make a free choice about what he should do. They also point out that he was seeking medical help for his problems, which indicates a desire to get better. Those who do hold him responsible say that body chemistry can affect decisions but does not make them. After all, the definition of legal insanity is very narrow. Not comprehending the difference between right and wrong, and Jason, in seeking help, show that he did understand that difference. Almost everyone has unfortunate influences in life. We have a social obligation, they say, to overcome those limitations, to choose wisely anyway.
1. According to the professor, what was one of the first indications of a connection between serotonin levels and violent behavior? 2. In the lecture, the professor mentioned some support for the belief that people freely choose whether to commit a crime or not. She also mentions arguments for the opposite, a lack of free choice. Indicate which position each statement supports. Mark an X in the proper box for each statement. 3. According to the professor, why is it sometimes helpful to reduce the speed at which serotonin is absorbed by brain cells? 4. Why does the professor start the lecture by mentioning free will and predetermination? 5.